Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs here on Crack Sidewalks. We are your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann here with Phil Bush. And for those of you who follow us on Twitter or find us in the message board, you know we were seeking out your questions this week, so we're going to get to a few of those in the show, answer some of the questions you sent to us with the hashtag Scrambled Questions. A couple business items I want to take care of off the top. Well, really just one thing. Luke Fisher was officially announced today as a member of the Marquette basketball program, so he is now practicing with the team. Phil, I know it's good to have this guy on board and know that he's going to be practicing for the next full year before taking the court in December.
Yes, it's great to have him. It's good to have it official. We've got some more height. Now we just need to put some meat on those bones.
Great soundbite from Jerry Wainwright today. That was tremendous. By the way, one thing I want to clarify, I may have misspoken earlier when I talked about Luke's eligibility. He will have 2.5 years at Marquette, not 3.5. So by playing 1 year at Indiana and then transferring, he essentially does lose 2 semesters of playing time. So he's a freshman now, and he will be a sophomore in the fall. So 2.5 years of Luke Fisher, which I will gladly take 2.5 years.
I will gladly take 2.5 years, and there's probably a Crean joke in there somewhere because we're only getting 2.5 years out of him.
You know, one thing I would maybe look for in the summer, just going to throw this out there, maybe Marquette try to apply to some kind of reason to get him eligible right away. And the only reason I say that is because Josh Smith was eligible right away at Georgetown, and just using that as an example. And I know, like, I think the petition on Georgetown's behalf was that he was mistreated at UCLA. Depending on what you read on the message board, it sounds like he was treated pretty roughly by Ben Hallen out there at UCLA. But regardless, he was eligible after sitting out just the spring semester and was eligible in the fall. It would probably be denied on Marquette's half. I guess I don't see the harm in just saying, hey, just send the application and maybe we get lucky and he can play right away.
I generally agree, but it is the NCAA. For all we know, we could apply for a waiver and end up with 7 years of sanctions. I don't know. I don't know how much I trust them.
Yeah, if there's no harm in applying, I say apply.
Right.
But, you know,
I doubt it, but it'd be great.
Yeah, just something to keep an eye on over the summer. Of course, since we last spoke, Phil, Marquette seemingly stuck in neutral. Another loss, another win. Another loss to a good team in Xavier, and another win over a bad team, and barely.
Yeah, that was hang on to your butts, where this is going to be tight kind of move.
Yeah, that was it was definitely got me a little nervous in the game against Seton Hall last week, but thankfully Marquette survived. So as we speak right now on this podcast, they are 2-2 in conference play. Before we get on to what's next and what we think about it, we're just going to go to your questions that we've gathered from the interwebs. And Phil, why don't you start us out with our first scrambled question?
Okay, the first scrambled question, and I'm going to do a bit of paraphrasing because Thrill Ho, or so he and or she is called,
that would be a heck of a name for. Anyway.
Well, I'm not going to draw conclusions. Had a heck of a rambling, incoherent, nothing approaching an answer. But the question essentially was, Crack Sidewalks, who we're a part of, published some stats about Deontay Burton being the fourth best in net points for the team, but ninth in minutes consumed. And the question was essentially, does that efficiency, is that a result of Buzz kind of protecting Burton and putting him in places where he can be successful? And would that number go down if we thought Burton played more, as you and I have both advocated quite passionately and openly about?
And I think that's a fair point, because I think as Burton has gotten extended minutes, he does get exposed a little bit defensively. And he does give up points on the other end. And maybe when he plays in short spurts, he gives you that little burst offensively, whether it's just a thunderous dunk or just a great move in the post or a great take, pull-up jumper, whatever it is. But I think that maybe his overall number there would go down if he were to get extended minutes. But I guess I would maybe like to see, just to be sure.
I agree. I'd like to see it. My concern, I would think the number would go down, and the reason why is right now, and some might view this as a criticism, but I think it's just part of the maturation process. Burton is a bit of the ball kind of stops with him on offense, which is great. I mean, he can create his own shot. He can drive to the bucket. You know, he's a very exciting player, but you know, as he matures, he'll learn to pass out of some of those scenarios where he can't really score that maybe results in a turnover. As he gets more minutes, I think he's going to be prone. Players are going to be able to defend him more consistently, and he might be prone to more turnovers, which would result in his numbers going down. So I do think this is a case where, once again, this is why we're sitting on our couches recording this podcast and Buzz Williams is coaching the players, is that Buzz is protecting him pseudo from himself and giving him opportunities to be successful without, you know, just taking the, you know, taking all control off of him.
I really think this speaks to a larger picture of, you know, how you alluded to. It's always easy to sit here on this podcast and say, play the freshmen, play the guys on the bench, play them more. Well, I think there's a reason they probably don't play more. Maybe they all would get exposed a little more, especially defensively, if they were to play the whole game. So I'll say this about Buzz. He is trying. We especially saw in that Xavier game, like, he played all three freshmen together, and that's the first time he's done that in a non-blowout situation that I can remember.
Right, and there were some positive results, as you know, from that, more in the second half than the first half. So yeah, but he still doesn't play him in crunch time. So either he doesn't trust him there, or he trusts the seniors more. We are definitely seeing the last two games, and I hope it continues. We're definitely seeing the glimpse of some shift. You said they're playing three freshmen together. We saw John Dawson play extended minutes, which I'm not necessarily in favor of, but I mean, it can't necessarily be that much worse than Derek Wilson has performed to date.
Yeah, I was intrigued by Dawson playing a little bit. Like I said, it's totally a small sample size, so I'm not ready to anoint him the point guard. But what he did show me in that Xavier game was at least the confidence to take outside shots and the ability to make a few. And, you know, over the course of a game, you would think that might stretch out the defense a little bit and maybe open things up down low, which is something we've been saying all year is an issue with Derek, is that, you know, when he gets the ball on the perimeter, they play, you know, 5 feet off of him and give him so much space. And I think with Dawson out there, you have to respect his shot a little more. Again, small sample size, just a few minutes in the Xavier game, but in those few minutes, I liked what I saw, and I guess I was kind of itching to see a little bit more of that in the Seton Hall game, and we really didn't see that much because he only played 4 minutes. But I was definitely intrigued, and I'm very curious to know what's been going on at practice for Marquette this week and how much Buzz is maybe leaning to trying Dawson a little more. Maybe Dawson showed him just enough to make Buzz think, maybe I should try him a little more, or if more Buzz is kind of stay in the course and think, and maybe that was more of an anomaly from Dawson.
Well, what I think is interesting is, and Rob published some key figures in Crack Sidewalks today, and one of them was a statistical comparison between Dawson and Wilson. And I think it's very interesting because if you look at the statistics Rob put together, and, you know, clearly he's smarter than the rest of us combined, but the statistics would bear out, and again, like you said, small sample size, would bear out that while neither one is really good for us right now, Wilson is statistically better than Dawson. But I agree with you from the eye test, from watching the game, I felt at times more confidence or more excitement, or like there was more possibility with Dawson in the game than Wilson. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be an argument between the eye test and the statistical test, and I don't know which one's right now.
Yeah, I guess if I had to be on one side or the other, I guess I'm more of an eye test guy. You know,
yeah,
like I just like go off what I see and what I think is correct, and I definitely probably should use statistics a little more to make me actually sound smarter and that I know maybe might know what I'm talking about on this podcast. But based on eye test, I definitely like Dawson better as an offensive player, and you know Derek, I would certainly grant as a better defensive player. You wish you can kind of mold them into one, but
right. Well, that's really we just need to mix their DNA because it you're right. It does come down to Derek's a good defensive player, and Dawson, he may not be a better offensive player, but he certainly acts like a better offensive player.
He
right
definitely
now
has some confidence on the offensive
right,
end,
which is I think Derek's greatest weakness. So
yeah, and you know Dawson came here to Dallas last year as a high school player, and I know it's a high school game, but I remember he dropped 36 points against a Dallas team, and people were really impressed with him. Like this kid coming from New Mexico and scoring against a 5A team in Dallas and scoring 36 against them. So I'm sure some of that high school confidence that maybe kind of gets you know, knocked down when you actually play against D1 players is still kind of hanging on Dawson because he hasn't gone against a lot of Division I players yet. So I'm sure he still comes in with the mindset that he's a scorer and that he's a guy who can create for others. And I think he still kind of has some of that high school confidence, if that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense. Well, and the other thing, kind of circling away from the Dawson thing, back to one of the other points I was going to make in terms of Buzz making changes, I do think maybe we'll see more minutes with Dawson. We're going to see the freshman more. The other thing I think we're seeing is Todd Mayo's kind of coming into his own a little bit. And I think Jake Thomas had fewer minutes. And I don't know if we're going to see it, but I definitely think we've gotten to the point where Todd Mayo should start over Jake Thomas.
Buzz has shook up the starting lineup a lot once we've gotten into conference play. And when you keep going through lineup changes and trying to find something that works and trying to shake things up, eventually you got to go through the lineup and say, maybe the two guard spot, because that's the one spot he's left alone, because Jake has started every game.
Right.
And I think maybe in one of these games coming up, Buzz, just in that spirit of trying something else, because he's already tried not starting Derek, and he's tried starting Otule and Gardner together, and you know he's tried starting Juan and Jameel together. Maybe in one of these games he might just say, you know, let's just start Todd and see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully something good happens.
Well, and I also think it is interesting, and I need to go back and look at this or pay more attention. But Todd's definitely getting more minutes, and he's performing with those minutes. What I'm not sure of is how much he's getting those minutes at the three with Jake in the game and how much he's getting the minutes at the two with Jake out of the game.
Right.
Because Juan Anderson's minutes have gone down some. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Juan's kind of falling out of favor or what. But there's definitely – Buzz is making some changes, some of them subtle, some of them – a little more obvious, and I'll be curious to see if it actually leads to something.
Yeah, and again, Buzz is absolutely trying. He's not just resting and just being stubborn with one lineup. He is throwing every possible combination out there, and we saw that especially in the Xavier game and maybe a little more in the Seton Hall game. He is looking at this team every day saying, how in the heck can I get a lineup that's going to give me everything I want offensively and defensively? He hasn't found it yet, and I don't know what the answer is, but he is certainly trying, and I like that he's tried to shake things up, and we'll see if he continues to do that in the next game. Boy, that went into a lengthy discussion on several different things coming out of one question. Should we dare go on to the next one?
God help us, if we go to two or three more, we might be here all night.
Yeah, we might be talking about, politics if we go into like three or four questions. But let's go to our next question. I'm going to go to Twitter for this one. This one came to us from Daily Eagle. They tweeted at us, people always talk about how Marquette could turn it around. Do you think we actually will? Curious to hear your opinions. Fair question, because as we've been kind of rambling here for the last 10 minutes and really on the podcast all season, ways to maybe turn it around, maybe ways to shake it up. Will Marquette actually turn it around? I'll let you go first, Phil.
I'm going to take the Joe McCann pessimist role.
Oh, that's mine.
I know. It's unfair. I don't think they will. I like you just got done saying, Buzz is throwing the kitchen sink at this, and we see glimmers of hope and improvement, but we don't see anything, you know, anything definitive like, yes, they're over the hump. And I think they're running out of track. They are almost out of runway. Mm-hmm. And at this point, every game is absolutely almost a must win. Right. And I just don't think there's enough time for them to put everything together to get over that hump. So I don't think they turn it around.
I'm going to bring in another question that was thrown out there on Crack Sidewalks into this podcast about what Marquette needs to do to make the tournament. And to answer this question, I think they may be able to turn it around to the point that they're successful enough that maybe they have a lineup or a team that Buzz really likes. But I think by the time they do, it's going to be too late. They're going to be so buried on, in the at-large field that I just don't think they're going to make up enough ground. That said, the new goal for this team, I think, if you're out of, unless you're in the discussion of or in the mindset that this team can still get an at-large bid, which I am squarely out of. I think to do that, you've got to win 12 of the next 14 or something really, really good.
Yeah, I agree with that.
To get that many wins. I mean, that may sound ridiculous, but really, as we're recording this podcast, Marquette's only good win is George Washington, which is shockingly in the top 25 in the RPI. They beat VCU on Tuesday, so I guess that's a good thing. But Marquette's next best win as we speak right now is DePaul. And that's all, their RPI is almost 100.
Woof.
So, And so that is – I think when people say Marquette can still get an at-large bid, I think they're largely forgetting that Marquette really doesn't have any good wins, like none.
Right.
And I think George Washington's only going to eventually go down in the A-10. I don't think they'll drop into the hundreds in the RPI, but I think they'll probably be, you know, in the 40s or maybe in the 50s or something. But
Well, to that point, it's not like we have a ton of opportunities within the conference play to really improve. I mean – In all honesty, we have another matchup against Creighton. We have two shots against Villanova. And you can make the argument that especially Georgetown on the road would be a good win. That's about it.
Right. And then you got and one more with Xavier, and you got two with Georgetown. And those are two teams that I think are going to be competing for maybe the third, fourth spots for the Big East in the tournament. Cause as we said last week, Phil, it's probably about 3.5 is kind of the over-under for this league, in our opinion, for the tournament. But I think kind of the new goal for Marquette, realistically, you know, I'm all for optimism as long as there's a little bit of realism with it, you know.
Right.
I think if you want to be realistic about it, I think the new goal really is let's make sure we get in the top six in the Big East, meaning you wouldn't have to win 4 games in 4 days to win the Big East tournament. And once you do that, the other goal is to be good enough in March that you can win 3 games in 3 days. So that, like, in that regard, Marquette's tournament hopes are not lost, because you still have to set the mindset of the goal, keep improving every day, and by the end of the season, when you get into March, you're good enough to win 3 games in 3 days, and then you're in the tournament, and then everything resets, and then you're right where you hope you can be.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, because that gives you the most. I mean, that gives you the most time to kind of improve. And I think this team in March, I think what's going to happen is this team in March is going to be pretty good, and we're going to be sitting there going, oh man, we're just short. You know, maybe we get a bad break and don't win the tournament, but we're going to get bounced off the bubble, and we're going to be talking about how good this team was at the end of the season. They just ran out of real estate. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. You do have to, you kind of have to almost get to the point where you put your eggs in the tournament basket.
Yeah, so to answer the question from Daily Eagle, I think they will improve and get to a point where they're certainly a lot more watchable and better offensively than they are now, but I think as far as the at-large bid is concerned, I think it's going to be too late when they do figure it out. The question is, are they going to be good enough and sound enough to win 3 games in 3 days in New York City? That's the larger concern.
Yeah, I think, agree.
And the thing is, it's kind of, almost kind of a crapshoot, but you just hope they're good enough that once Marquette enters the Big East tournament, they say, okay, this team's good enough to win 3 games in 3 days. And, you know, going off that thing of how good they have to be, Phil, that Rob kind of threw out there on Twitter, you know, people are saying, all right, what does Marquette have to be in the conference? Is it 14-4, 15-5, 12-6? And I said, you know, I said even 14-4 may not be enough. But I think the reason I say that, maybe that's way too pessimistic, maybe when I actually think about it and say 14-4, that's probably pretty good, and that might get it done. But I guess the idea that Marquette could win 12 of the next 14 games, because they already have 2 losses, folks. Let's not forget. They're 2-2 right now.
We can't go
right
back
now
and replay those games.
Yeah, they're 2-2 as we record this podcast. So that means they would be go 12-2 the rest of the season. And the likelihood of this roster and this team suddenly flipping a switch and going 12-2 starting right now just seems so foreign to me. I guess that's why I say I don't think it's good enough. It's I just can't grasp the idea of this team suddenly going 12-2. Now, if you go a little bit down the line, you go 13-5. Okay, so that means they're going to go 11-3 over the next 14 games. That still seems a little foreign to me.
Well, and I think if you're going to go 11-3, you know, or if you say that down the stretch 11-3 gets you in, I only accept that gets you in if you beat Villanova on the road.
Right. If those 3 losses are Creighton and a sweep by Nova, and your best wins are a sweep over Georgetown and getting Xavier at home, I don't think that's enough.
No, that's not enough. Now, none of this happens in a vacuum, obviously. I mean, there's a whole bunch of – an anonymous Eagle talked about it in a tweet or asked us about it in a tweet, but clearly we can't keep ourselves concise to answer questions. But we've now written War and Peace. But, you know, there's other teams. All the 500 teams in all the other conferences have an impact. You know, so, like, tonight, I don't know who you cheer for in this game. Maybe the end of the world, but Indiana versus Wisconsin. Indiana beat Wisconsin. Now that means, you know, Indiana's kind of 500 in the Big Ten. They're a team we're now competing against for a bubble spot. So right. It all depends on who those other teams are. 12-2 gets you in. You have the potential that, you know, going 10-4 down the stretch gets you in, but you're going to have to count on a whole lot of other teams to kind of become craptacular as well.
Right. Yeah, it's just hard to predict because you don't know what the bubble's going to look like in February. Right. Because everyone's playing conference games. Other teams that are on the bubble are going to have brain farts. Teams are going to have bad losses. You just hope when Marquette gets there, they don't have any bad losses, and maybe they can sneak in a few good wins there, and maybe the resume looks good enough. I still think 14-4 is a pipe dream. I think that means they flip a switch starting right now, and I think that's too soon. I'm not sure they're ready for that.
If we had beaten Seton Hall convincingly, like if we had played the second half of the Seton Hall game like the first half of the Seton Hall game, I'd be closer to thinking that might be an opportunity. But, based on how they came out in the set, they're still not there. They still don't get it. I just don't think it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I think there's still some growing that needs to take place. And Buzz still has to figure out what that lineup is. And I know he's looking at it every day saying, what have I got to put out there that's going to give me what I need? And maybe some player or players step up between now and March and just take ownership of this team and say, look, guys, I'm leading you in. By the way, I guess that brings up another thing. As we continue to drift off on topics and avoid questions, did you see Todd Mayo's quote about Jameel Wilson after the DePaul game?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, he said, the gist of it was, when Jameel is not coaching and he just plays, he's one of the best in the country. So he said he wishes Jameel wouldn't coach up other players on the floor and
would just shut up and play.
Yeah, I guess maybe I just don't pay attention enough, and this is a product of watching on TV and not in person. I guess I've never really noticed Jameel coaching more than playing.
I definitely see him direct, especially on offense, and especially when the freshmen are in. I've noticed it like with Deontay and stuff. There's a lot of pointing going on out of Jameel.
Yeah, and maybe Todd calling him out was a good thing, and because I certainly agree with what Todd said.
You know, right. Right.
When
and
Jameel plays, and he just plays, he is pretty dang good.
Right. Well, it was kind of, not to be rude, but it was kind of shocking coming out of Todd, because that was a real kind of like leadership moment. I thought.
It's like, did Todd grow up?
Holy crap! Maybe we put it together here. But I think he's right. I remember Buzz saying something. I think it was Jameel went off against St. John's last year or somewhere. No, it was Rutgers, I think, when we kind of had a train wreck of a game. But Jameel Wilson kind of pulled it all together for us at the end. I remember Buzz saying something similar, that Jameel's one of the smartest players he's coached. But he thinks too much and he gets too involved in kind of the cerebral stuff and he just doesn't relax and do it naturally. We got to see more of the, like I said, just shut up and play kind of out of Jameel and let somebody else take the leadership role. Because if Todd's noticing it, it's probably something that we should let someone else kind of worry about that and let Jameel do his thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because we're not going to go 12-2 without Jameel at the top of his game.
And I think you say that for a lot of guys, but absolutely, Jameel needs to be he needs to have that killer instinct. He needs to be an All Big East player. I thought he would be this year, and the fact that he hasn't been has been kind of disappointing, to say the least.
Well, and he's the guy. I think we both agree that we thought if he could put it all together, he was the next perhaps potentially NBA product to come out of Marquette, because he's got all the physical tools.
Absolutely,
he's just not putting it together for whatever reason.
Yeah, very interesting for Todd to say that. I just wanted to bring that up before
I thought that was good.
Get on to the next question. Phil, what is our next question?
This is an interesting one from Downtown 85. Why can't women put mascara on with their mouth closed?
I'm speechless. I have no answer.
I have answers, but they're not appropriate for a podcast.
Next.
I think we talked about the necessary tourney necessary record to get into the tourney. Mm-hmm. So I guess the last question here is, will Buzz change his approach if the team is no longer in contention for an at-large? So we talked about, anything less than 12-2 or 11-3 really probably isn't going to get it there. So if we've got a record like that, if we lose the next couple, does Buzz change what he's doing, or does he coach like the record doesn't matter?
I would think the latter, for the main reason, as I talked about earlier, because that conference tournament's still at the end. Even if Marquette loses out and disaster strikes, they still have a chance to win the Big East tournament and get that bid. And that is the ultimate goal, is just to get into the tournament. So I don't think his approach would change it, like, into respective, like, I think the question basically kind of suggests, do we bench all the upperclassmen and just play all the freshmen? I think that's kind of what the question is suggesting.
Yeah, I think that's what it's suggesting. And I actually, I guess this is one of those instances where I disagree with where you're at a little bit, in that I think Buzz would change his approach, in that I think he, and there's a theory behind it I'll try and get to, but I do think he'll play the freshman more minutes. I think he would be less restrictive on Juwan Johnson and less restrictive on Deontay Burton, and probably play John Dawson more, simply because up to this point, with what we've been doing, hasn't been good enough to get us over the hump. My argument would be, if we're going to get over that hump, that's going to rely on the freshmen. So we got to get them minutes now so they're ready to contribute as part of the tournament.
Yeah, I guess I kind of agree with that, kind of the way you explained it there, is that, yeah, if once, I guess, Buzz accepts the fact that an at-large possibility is gone, maybe he would play the freshmen more to see if they get them to where he wants the team to be. Because I think he's going to be kind of holding on to, because, you know, as much as I said earlier that he's not sticking with one lineup, he is sticking with a few things. I mean, he's still playing Derek a lot. He's still playing Jake a lot. The freshmen still don't get huge minutes consistently. Maybe they would get bigger minutes more consistently if he decided to really shuffle the deck and see if that gets him to where he wants the team to be. But I do think, kind of going back to my original point, he would still stay the course in regards to just trying to get a win every night and whatever he thinks would be the best for the team to get a win in each individual night, because he would still kind of focus on getting the team as high as possible in the Big East tournament for seeding and then trying to win three games or four games in the Big East tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. So I don't think he would – he maybe would adjust a little bit, I guess, to answer the question. But
yeah,
I still think he would still put the team that he thinks gives him the best chance to win, as opposed to just throwing a lineup out there and just seeing what happens.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's not going to be a case where if you kind of went to sleep for 2 weeks and woke up and you looked at the court and went, holy crow, this thing's all different than when I fell asleep. Yeah. I think it'll be just – it'll be slightly less restrictive. So it'll be a moderation of what he's already doing, not a full-blown, you know, everything's off, change everything kind of move.
Yeah,
I just don't see Buzz as a panic move kind of guy anyway.
Yeah, you definitely don't blow anything up, because it's not like this is the pros where you can just start trading people and for, you know, freshmen to be named later.
I mean, what do you think we can get for Dylan Flood?
I don't know. Rally towels.
I was going to say a ham sandwich, but...
Aw. Poor Dylan.
That's mean. Once again, we're sitting on our couches.
Dylan gets trolled enough by the Marquette official Twitter page. We don't need to troll poor Dylan.
That's true.
But maybe he gets in a few games this year. Maybe Marquette can blow out Seton Hall or DePaul or someone in an upcoming game. That would be really nice. But we've already seen them against Seton Hall and DePaul, and it was much closer than we anticipated. Maybe they could blow out Butler on Saturday. That would be nice. As we're recording this, Butler is just getting dump trucked by Creighton in their game. So it looks like, barring an unforeseen comeback as we wrap up this recording, Butler will be 0-5 when Marquette visits on Saturday. Marquette, I guess this is their first visit to Hinkle. Certainly in this Big East play, his first.
I don't remember them playing at Hinkle any time in my memory.
I would guess it's the first visit ever, but certainly the first conference game between Marquette and Butler. So I think that's exciting. When the league was formed, certainly the idea was this would be Buzz against Brad Stevens. Obviously that is not the case. That is the Celtics game there. But I guess my concern for this game, Phil, is that Butler is going to be a wounded animal, desperate for a win. Butler still, despite their record in Big East play, is I remember on Monday, for those who take this for what it's worth, Joe Lunardi had them in like his next four out for the NCAA tournament. So Butler isn't that far off, but they're just so buried in the conference right now, they're in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to wear the Joe McCann pessimism hat, but I do think there's a confluence of things going on. Butler being kind of the wounded animal, losing five straight. I mean, if they lose six straight to start conference play, I mean, just shut off the lights and lock up when you leave, right, kind of thing. plus Marquette's going to, you know, Marquette's going to have the full week off. So are they a little rusty or not? That can go either way. Then it's a real short turnaround going back on the road at Georgetown. And Marquette hasn't had a ton of road experience, you know, kind of in the Big East. So I just think there's a whole, and it's a critical three game stretch, right? It's at Butler on Saturday, at Georgetown on Monday, and then Villanova at the Bradley Center the following Saturday. That's basically the three game season right there. So
it is a crucial three game stretch. If you are still in the Marquette can get an at large bid community, which I am not, but if you're still believing that's possible, you have to believe Marquette has to win at least two of the next three, ideally three of them. If Marquette wins the next three, you can officially jump on the bandwagon and say they've turned this thing around. We are going to state. We are going to win everything, and we are in great shape. But I think that is asking a lot for this team to win three straight in a critical stretch like this. I think Butler's a scary game for me just because, I mean, they play hard. They still defend well. I mean, Brad Stevens coached most of these guys last year, so they still kind of have that mindset. They're going to be a frustrating team at home. Other teams have had scares against Butler in Hinkle this year. They just have been able to escape with wins. And then, you know, Georgetown is a team just like Marquette that has its flaws but also has talent. Georgetown is hard to figure out sometimes, quite frankly. They go out and they lose by 18 to Providence, or they can turn around and, you know, and get a nice win against somebody else. But and then, of course, Villanova at home is going to be critical because that's going to be a chance for Marquette to get a top five RPI win, which would really, I think, change a lot of opinions if they could get that.
Well, I think you're right. And for the Marquette can get the at-large bid, we have to go at win at least two. One of those wins has to be against Villanova. So we either have to beat Georgetown or Butler, and we have to beat Villanova. If we beat Georgetown and Butler but lose to Villanova at home, I think that means we have to win at least one or at least the second round game in the Big East tournament. We have to beat Villanova at home to have any shot at an at-large bid. Maybe the math doesn't work out that way, but that's the only
way. It kind of feels that way because you just feel like Marquette's grasping for some good wins, and you got to hold serve at home. Ideally, if you're Marquette, you would love to win all of your home games.
Well, I think I do think they have to, and I think I said as much in Twitter, I think they have to go undefeated at home the rest of the way if they're going to get an at-large bid. And every game they lose at home means either an extra game they have to win on the road, obviously, or an extra one or two games in the Big East tournament they have to win. I mean, you know, if they lose one or two at home, I think they got to go all the way to the Big East Finals at least.
Yeah, because, you know, it's hard to project what that's going to look like, but just off the top, just kind of giving a rough guess, at your first game in the Big East Tournament is probably not going to do much for your resume, whoever you're playing. So it's the second game is where you may be able to stack another quality win, and then the final where you're probably going to face Creighton or Nova, then you may be talking about something really good. If you could get a really good win there, then you obviously, well, if you win that game, you're winning the tournament regardless, but I guess my thing is these next three games, you know, when I did our re-predictions in a podcast when we re-looked at the Big East, I had this as three straight losses. As we approach this game now, Phil, I'm 50-50 on Butler, really. You know, I don't know if I want to stick with my prediction of Marquette losing to Butler this Saturday or not. I want to think Marquette could get this win, but every time I've said that, they've taken a step backwards and kind of had a disappointing performance. And I know I said I wouldn't pick Marquette to win a tough game until they actually did one. I'm not sure how much at Butler qualifies as a tough game. It's definitely a trap game at the very least.
Yeah.
I think at the very least it's a trap game, a game where you could get tripped up. I want to say Marquette can go to Butler and get a win on Saturday, though.
Marquette has achieved something. I've always been kind of cautiously optimistic. I'm kind of sensing I'm similar to where you are, where I always said I don't feel good about it, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think this time I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I do think we lose to Butler at Butler.
Wow, we've like traded personalities from this podcast to the last one. Yeah,
did we have some sort of Freaky Friday incident that no one told me about?
Yeah, answer the phone at the same time, or just lightning strike, or I don't know how that happened. But
do you get to be Jason Bateman or Ryan Reynolds?
Do I have to be one or the other?
Well, one's married to Blake Lively. Does that help?
Yeah, I'll be Ryan Reynolds.
Okay. Well, twist my arm.
But do I have to be the Green Lantern?
Yes. Yes, okay. I think that's how this clearly the rules of this very realistic game must be played.
Okay, we've gone way farther into that than I really needed to. So I'm going to take Butler to get a win. I'm going to take Marquette to get a win at Butler. I'm just going to try to be positive, try to be optimistic, go against the pick I had earlier on when I said Marquette would have three straight losses and then the wheels would totally fall off. Let's say Marquette gets this win at Butler. I still think they don't win at Georgetown. Who knows what Georgetown's going to look like if Josh Smith is going to play or not. I think that would be a big factor, honestly, in that game, Phil, if Josh Smith plays. Because the thing is, when he's motivated, that guy's got to be so frustrated. And actually, I work with a Georgetown fan, so I know. Like, Georgetown fans are just so frustrated with him because, you know, obviously he has his weight issues. That's been kind of well-documented. Whether he's motivated, now he's got academic issues and he's off the court, so he might not even play. So, but if he's out there, obviously he's going to be a problem for Gardner and Otule because he's obviously a load there in the middle.
Right. Well, and that's one of those, you know, you almost need him out there because you want to beat Georgetown with him, because we know the committee looks at who you played and did they have players. They'll take, you know, this player was injured into account when they had all their bad losses, etc. So you almost want them to play so you can say, well, we beat them with Josh Smith. But I do think without Josh Smith is probably, or certainly gives us the best odds of winning. And I would move that game. If Josh Smith doesn't play, I would move that to a likely win. If Josh Smith does play, I would put that probably in the same place as the Butler game, where it's like 49-51, and I'm just coming down on the wrong side of the split.
Devontae Smith-Rivera is a concern as well. I mean, he's actually been shooting the ball really well for the Hoyas. He's averaging almost 18 a game now. So that's the sophomore guard is really tough. I'll say this about Josh Smith, though. As much as you know, people get on Devontae for getting up and down the floor, I think in a foot race between Smith and Gardner, I think Josh Smith would finish third. I think because at least Gardner could beat him down the floor, and maybe you could get some points in transition, because I think, you know, Smith's a big boy, man. He's probably, what, 350, 320 right now?
He looks like someone who ate Devontae Gardner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think Gardner would lap him, and that's kind of the thing, is Gardner could potentially outwork him, but, you know, it would be an interesting matchup between Otule and Josh Smith, just from a height, and, you know, Smith would have the size advantage, but Otule would have a little bit more of the height advantage. So it would be interesting.
Yeah, but I think that game, obviously all these games are important, but Georgetown and Marquette, in my opinion, really kind of in the same boat as far as a team kind of battling, kind of looking up and chasing Xavier right now, but teams trying to be that fourth team in the Big East to get into the NCAA tournament. And the latest bracketology kind of has Georgetown in. It's still early for that stuff, but that I just like to look at. It's going to give me a indicator of where everyone is at the moment. Marquette really not even on the radar for the NCAA tournament, of course, at this moment. But win these three games, and I'd be curious to see exactly if Marquette starts popping up on anybody's radar as last four out or next four out, or a team that's even, you know, see how high their RPI would be. Because I think, obviously, if you win these next three, the win over Villanova would – obviously would be such a huge RPI boost, and then we'd have a lot of reason to believe. But you really just can't overlook these two, because these two are just as likely wins as losses as I see them.
Yeah, well, I agree. I mean, if there's any sign of optimism, I will say this, that Marquette has shown flashes, can certainly have a good shooting night and play well. So can they win all three? Absolutely. There is no doubt in my mind they could win all three. Are they likely to win all three? No.
No.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at.
Let's not forget what we've seen all season.
Right, you know, right.
That's the thing that gives me so much pause as I try to get way too optimistic and hopeful on this team, is that every big challenge, every tough game, they've come up short. Blame whatever you want. Injuries, suspension, referees' calls, just a bad night for a star player here or there. As Bill Parcells always says, you are what you are. And right now, Marquette, they are a 10-7 team. They are a team that's 2-2 in the Big East. They are a team that has star players disappear here and there. They are a team that has star players get in foul trouble and can't contribute at the end of the game. They are a team that doesn't get good backcourt play. That's just who they are. And you would hope the dynamic would change here. Something has to change. It just the way the team operates offensively.
Right. Well, another quote to throw in here would be, you know, Albert Einstein's who defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over and again, over and over again, and expecting different results. We keep doing the same things. Why would we expect the results to change?
And Nick Saban actually put a poster to that effect in the Alabama players' locker rooms. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. I missed that one.
He put a poster in every player, Alabama football player's locker room that said, if you do the same thing over and over again, you will get the same results. And it was pictures of Auburn and Oklahoma celebrating.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was Saban's motivational thing. I covered Saban when I was in Louisiana. And, yeah, he is a bit of a character to cover, to say the least, but he's a brilliant coach, and I think that was pretty interesting.
Were there piles of cash under the posters or behind the posters?
I didn't see. All I saw was the poster.
Oh, okay. So we can neither confirm nor deny how the cash is delivered.
No comment. All I saw was the poster that I thought was creative, but your quote reminded me of that. But it is true. I mean, you can't keep doing the same thing over and over again, expect different results. And yeah, we could sit here and suggest, put this guy in, put that guy in. But the bottom line is, we've said over and over again, we need more consistency from Jamil Wilson. We need better play from the backcourt. Does that mean Todd Mayo plays more? Does that mean Juwan Johnson plays more? Does that mean Deontay Burton plays more? I wish we had the answers, because then I would just send it to Buzz in an email, and that would be, you know, one of 500 emails that he apparently gets with suggestions on how to fix this team. I trust that Buzz, I know he's trying to find what's wrong with this team and try to find the lineup that works best for him. The problem is, there is no perfect answer, really, because maybe when you give one guy a shot, he doesn't perform as well. And then the guy that comes in and replaces him, oh, maybe I've got something here, let's play him. Well, maybe I don't have anything in this guy.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I'd love to see that contact list of all those armchair coaches that
I would love to see what people and like who they are. Like as much as we complain or suggest and throw stuff out on this podcast, I would never actually contact any coach in any sport saying, "Look, hey, coach, I have an idea. Just hear me out on this, because I think I know this team better than you do.
If you could bear with me for roughly 7 to 12 paragraphs, I will deliver all the solutions."
Yeah, you ever see the Friday Night Lights, the movie?
Yeah.
You know, where they brought the coach in and sat him down and said, "Hey, coach, just got some guys you want to introduce you to here," and it was all the old timers. You know, said, "Hey, coach, I think you need to go to that cover too," and they were just talking all kinds of strategy like they're the guys who run the team. Make them feel like they're involved. I've God bless Buzz for putting all his information out there and letting people contact him on stuff like that, because obviously he doesn't need people telling him how to run his team. We just like to yak about it and talk about it on the podcast. But I, like I said, if I had the answer, a definitive answer, I would suggest it to him. I just don't have one.
Well, and I'd have a real issue. I'd also think Buzz was very susceptible to Nigerian princes if he were to listen to anything we had to say.
Yeah, I that would be if we're really suggesting how to run this team, Marquette is in all kinds of trouble. But hopefully Buzz rights the ship. Hopefully Jamil Wilson takes Todd Mayo's advice. That's high on the list of things I never thought I would say when the season began, and would really turn things around in this next game. Maybe we could see. I'm really hoping we see another good performance from Todd Mayo, because he actually has been playing well. Who knows what we'll see in the lineup? But for the record, I am going to say Marquette, in these next two games, is going to go win loss. I'm going to say win at Butler, lose at Georgetown.
I'm going to go the other way, but I'm going to go lost Butler, win Georgetown.
Ooh.
But it's a 51-49 split both directions. So.
It really is. It's a coin toss both ways, and it would be nice if Marquette would get just a nice win. Not a great win, because that's Villanova. That's what we talk about on the next podcast. Just a nice win where we just said, all right, that was nice.
Well, I would like
that
to get
was a
to
win, and it wasn't DePaul.
Right. I mean, I would love to get to the point where everyone's going, well, now what seed do you think we're going to get? But
yeah.
we ain't going to be there for a while. So, yeah.
I think the only seed we're going to be talking out about between now and March is the Big East tournament seed. And then we'll talk about NCAA tournament seed.
Yeah, I think we just need to get a good win so everyone can kind of breathe and go, oh, okay, I feel better.
Yeah, I do too. Well, definitely want to thank everybody for submitting their scrambled questions. I know we didn't get to all of them, but I think in general we addressed a lot of the questions and thoughts that were sent to us. So I felt that was pretty fun.
Yeah, I think scrambled questions should reappear sometime this season.
I think we'll definitely do that again later this season, especially on a week when Marquette has a bye and doesn't have a midweek game. But again, thanks everybody for listening. Again, you can always hit us up on Twitter. On Twitter, I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. Or you can also tweet at Crack Sidewalks. You can also find us on Facebook. There is a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where you can like us there, and that's where we post the podcast. And of course, we are on iTunes, so you can download it for your listening pleasure. And of course, you can just leave comments on Crack Sidewalks itself when you go to the page that we tweet out. So, Phil, any final thoughts as we wrap up today's pod?
No, just looking for a good win, and appreciate the fan base turning out with their questions and their participation. It's good to know somebody listens.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for your questions. Thanks for tweeting at us, and hopefully we do it again next week. For Phil, I'm Joe. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everyone.